Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, what's up, guys? This is Ryan Dorfman here with UFC versus Fantasy Sports. UFC meets Fantasy Sports. We got a good show for you tonight. I might have a guest caller in about 5 minutes. We'll see if he comes through. But in the meantime, guys, tonight we're going to be talking about college basketball. Maybe talk some NBA, some baseball, maybe a little hockey. All right? It's going to be fun. So let's begin with a little commentary by myself on, and when it comes to college basketball, I really wanted to talk first and foremost about storming the court. And I know this is something that a lot of people have discussed, but as I'm seeing so many top teams fall this year, specifically just kind of like a moving shuffling board at the top of the AP rankings for college basketball, it's just dawns on me, I mean, how many opportunities there are to really storm the court for these fans. And in my opinion, someone's eventually going to get hurt, and people have already begun to get hurt, but they just haven't really been athletes. They've been fans, and people just kind of look the other way because that doesn't make news, and it should. Storming the court is very dangerous. It's something that, I mean, look, it's a tremendous experience, I'm sure. I've never done it myself. But I'm sure that the electricity that when a top team goes down on your home court, it's crazy, you know. But I think there's a time and place for everything, and I think that a mass hysteria of fans just stampeding to the court, leaving just reckless, leaving no regard for anyone but themselves, is just a recipe for disaster, any way you look at it. So I really think that it's a bad idea to storm the court, and I think that, honestly, more recognition needs to go to it. I want to quickly point out that the UConn women's basketball team is about a minute and 14 seconds away from winning their 100th straight game. They're up 66-53 against number 6 South Carolina. And I can't be more proud of this group of young women who are just absolutely phenomenal. The coaching and leadership and mentorship of head coach Gino Auriemma, who won his first title there in 1995, has been absolutely amazing. It has been mind-boggling. You know, when they won the 91 games and then lost to Stanford, I remember watching that game because they had won 91 games, and it made news that they were losing the game. And then the story became, could they ever reach that pinnacle again? Probably not. And then they did, and they have, and they deserve every ounce of recognition for this. I was talking to my friend earlier, and I was like, hey, you know, what's going to happen when Gino retires? I do believe that other teams are going to be able to recruit harder, to recruit better. It's not going to be just UConn above everyone, you know, like it has been for so many years now. But UConn is the real deal, and they have been for so long. So congratulations to the UConn women's basketball team, now 34 seconds away from winning their 100th consecutive game. 24 seconds now and counting. You know, for the first time, and God knows how long, women's college basketball is making the front page of ESPN, and rightfully so, as these girls have earned it. 26 months of blood, sweat, and tears is now finally coming to fruition for this team, for this coach, for this program. It is over. The UConn women's basketball team has won 100 consecutive games. 100 consecutive games. I am so proud of them. I am so proud of this team. So proud of these women. Congratulations to Gino Auriemma. Congratulations to the UConn women's basketball program. This is something you probably never, ever see in the history of sports. No team has ever done this. No team has ever come close to the dominance the UConn women's basketball team has had. It is phenomenal, and hats off to them. So let's begin, and let's dive into our show. I'm going to reach out to my guest to see if he's going to call in. Hold on one second. And here we go. So I guess we'll see if he does call in. We'll shoot you right there. But in the meantime, let's get to the show. And I'm really excited to talk about buy or sell college basketball. I'm going to go through the rankings and tell you guys, really, honestly, whether or not I'm buying or selling some of these teams. Let's begin with Maryland. The Maryland Terrapins sitting at 21-4, at 23rd in the AP poll. I'm not buying this team. I'm not buying Maryland at all. You know, you look at their schedule and you look at this team, and Mel Trimble's nice. But you look at the team, I mean, the first game of the year, they almost lost to American University. You know, they Richmond took them into overtime. You know, they beat Kansas State by one. I mean, but this team, this, I mean, only they only beat St. Peter's by a fractional margin. They've gotten lucky, honestly, this year. They haven't really beaten anyone of note. I mean, they played Purdue, lost. That was the only ranked opponent they've played this year. And I'm not buying this team. I'm not buying Maryland as a team. You know, Mello Trimble's nice, but they don't have a single player on the roster besides, okay, well, Justin Jackson. Besides Justin Jackson, no one else can really rebound the ball on this team, it seems like. They definitely are not a passing game. That's what worries me the most, is that their best assist numbers, I mean, Mel Trimble and Anthony Cowan are both tied for 3.5 assists a game, and that's not going to cut it. You know, I don't like that. I don't like that they're not a passing team. And so I'm not really high on Maryland this year. 22 St. Mary. I know I skipped over, but I just feel like Notre Dame and Butler, 25 and 24 are ranked as supposed to be. 22 St. Mary's. I would say that, you know, they're pretty much ranked where they're supposed to be. South Carolina, I like South Carolina a lot. I really do. I think that their defense is very good. Now, I don't think – I'm not buying them, okay? So I do like them a lot. I think that, you know, I mean, according to Ken Pom, you know, they have the best defense. They have the best defense in the NCAA. I have a caller in. Eliav, are you there?
Yeah, what's up?
What's going on, Eliav? How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
I'm doing great here. It's just me. This is my show, UFC Meets Fantasy Sports, but we're briefly just talking right now about buy or sell college basketball. You're the Sun Devils guy, so I know you're a big college basketball fan. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. And Sun Devils are doing not too hot, but they're coming off a big win.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Oh, I want to talk to you about some of these top teams that whether you're buying or selling them. Obviously, Gonzaga sitting at 26-0 at the top of the polls, just beat St. Mary's. This is a team that we usually see in the tournament. They go pretty far. They're never usually able to make that step into the national championship. What do you think about Gonzaga this year?
I mean, I think, you know, when a team is as hot as they are right now, you can't help but buy in right now. But at the same time, you mentioned it, when it comes to those national tournaments, they're just a couple steps away always from taking that next step. So we'll see if they'll do that this year. But as hot as they are right now, there's no chance. I mean, there's no way not to buy in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, Gonzaga, you know, this is a team that, you know, they really don't make it very far. I mean, they always make it to, like, the Elite Eight, and then they lose. So I think they're
a good
team. There's no doubt about that. But it's the question of whether or not they're a championship-caliber team is really a question that a lot of people are asking. You know, Duke is another team that I think a lot of people are sleeping on. People say, okay, well, you know, they're not doing so well this year. But people forget that this is a team that everyone was picking to win it all at the beginning of this year. Harry Giles, you know, Coach K is obviously still the coach of that team. Jason Tatum, Grayson Allen, Luke Kennard, Matt Jones. There is still a terrific roster there. I mean, do you think Duke has the potential to go all the way?
Absolutely. Duke is legit. People are sleeping on them, but they have to remember that they were injured for most of the year so far until recently, and they've been heating up. They've obviously already had a couple of really big wins lately, and I think it's just going to keep being that way. And, you know, people – it's surprising when you hear people sleeping on Duke, but that really is the case as of right now. And they need to stop because it's Coach K, it's Duke. You mentioned all the players. They're legit, and they're a force to be reckoned with. And it's when it come tournament time, you're going to see that.
We'll ask you two more questions. One of them will be baseball. But let's start with the Sun Devils, your forte. Obviously, we're 12-14. We're 7th in the Pac-12. It hasn't been great, you know, but Bobby, he's slowly making his way to begin trying to recruit more players to ASU. U of A's been beating us out. Obviously, they stole DeAndre Ayton. But, you know, I mean, in your opinion, how do you fix this team? I mean, what are you doing if you're Bobby Hurley? How do you turn this team around?
Well, you need time. People are jumping the gun right now and thinking – I've heard a lot of rumors about, well, not rumors, but I've heard just a lot of opinions that Bobby Hurley should be fired or they should move on. I mean, everyone, relax. This is his second season, fourth season head coaching in general. This guy, you have to allow him to have time. And that's all he's going to need, because he's already had a good effect. It's moving and going towards the right direction, you know, and they'll keep getting better. The recruits will come, especially when you have a guy like Bobby Hurley at the helm. Just need time, and they will get there. That's all it is, I think.
Well, speaking of Bobby Hurley, let me ask you something. I mean, how much do you know, for example, do you know if James Harden, for instance, plays any pivotal role in recruiting guys? I mean, we've seen guys as far back as when Jim Brown was at Syracuse and he recruited Ernie Davis, you know, to come to this program. So using these athletes that everyone knows about to recruit high school guys could be a very big part of a team's recruiting plan. I mean, do you know anything about James Harden and his involvement in the ASC recruiting process?
I don't know too much about it, but I do not, from what I know, I do not think that he is a part of it. You know, that would be nice if he could help them out, but I do think they just need to land one big guy to put them back on the map, if you will, and really contention in Pac-12, because right now they're not there. Thon Maker was almost that guy before he obviously went to the NBA. But, you know, the fact that they were even that close with landing somebody that big is a great sign to me. And then Sam Cunliffe, you know, he left. It sucks. But at the end of the day, he did sign here at first, and he just wasn't interested in being a part of a rebuilding process. You need guys who are. You need guys, a big guy who – will be part of it, you know, or think that they're the biggest piece to getting out of it. But yeah, so I think I'm not sure about James Harden, but listen, if he can help out, that'd be great for them.
I agree. I think he could really do a lot, and we'll talk baseball in just a second. Just ask you one question, but you know, you said about Thon Maker. I totally agree. And Bobby Hurley, you know, went on record saying how it was easier to recruit foreign players mostly because they don't really know the difference between an ASU and a Duke. And so, being able to recruit those guys again on the same playing field as these Dukes and Kentuckys is very important. And if we had gotten him, it would have been huge for our program. But let's talk just one question for you about baseball. Finally, you know, pitchers and catchers reported yesterday. It's getting into we're getting into baseball again, you know, and people are just hyping up the Red Sox, and understandably, but they're kind of forgetting about the Cubs. The Cubs are still the team. So, in your opinion, I mean, are you seeing a Cubs Red Sox matchup potentially, or what do you think?
Well, it's, you know, I always hate these really, really, really early picks because they give me just fits. because it's so hard to say, but yeah, right now, I mean, the Cubs look great. You know, I'm always rooting for my Dodgers. I think, you know, they always are in the mix, especially, you know, getting Chase Utley back, a huge signing in Jansen. You know, I think that, you know, they're going to be in the mix, but at the end of the day, I think the Cubs are still the best team in baseball. And I would pick them over the Sox, but hey, yeah, the Red Sox, they look good. It's all a matter of, can they pitch come postseason, you know, and can they deliver at that time? But it's so far away. I'm just so excited that baseball season is right around the corner.
All right, last question for you, Elliot. I mean, I know we were not able to watch the fights, the Holly Holm UFC 208 this past weekend, but obviously a lot of controversy surrounding the fights, you know, but you know, what we're seeing in the UFC, and the trend is that it's really three strikes and you're out, three losses and you're out. I've seen it so many times. I mean, are you going to cut Holly Holm? I mean, we saw her fight Ronda and win, but after that, she's lost every fight after beating Ronda. I mean, what are you doing with her?
You know what? It's surprising because it all depends if she can stay up. If she can stay standing up, then she's always going to have a chance because obviously that's her strength. But it just seems as though, you know, she exploded since that Ronda fight, obviously. And then since then, like you said, it's just really been a downward spiral for her. And you know, she was pretty quiet before Ronda, so it was kind of a big spike and then back to the kind of, you know, plateauing. So I don't want to count her out just yet because we know what she's capable of, but it definitely, you know, she needs to change something up because it has not been working, obviously.
All right, thanks, Elliot. Why don't you tell everybody about your show and tell them how they can hear you and follow you on Twitter?
Oh, thank you. Oh, well, you know, I'm part of the Weston DeWitt Show with Eliav Gabay. I'm the producer and co-host. You know, every sport we can get to. I mean, we even covered bowling today. We try and cover as much as we can. Mondays, 11 a.m. to 12 noon on Mondays. You can get us on blazeradioonline.com, call into the show. And Ryan's called in before. It's always a great conversation. So yeah, just tune in. A bunch of sports talk. We're nominated for an IBS award for best sports talk show in the nation. We're going at the end of the month, at the beginning of March, to see if we actually got it. So we're feeling pretty good. But yeah, tune in. We'd love to have as many listeners and as many callers as possible. We love a good debate. So yeah, tune in.
All right, thanks, Eliav. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, for sure. Thanks, Ryan. Have a good one.
Thanks, man. Bye bye. All right, so that was Eliav Gabay. Glad to have him on the show. Gave some insight right there. Let's go back briefly to buy or sell, and maybe I'll touch back on some of the things that he mentioned. You know, Gonzaga. You know, just to kind of just briefly address that. You know, I think they're a good team, and that's no lie. But I'm not buying Gonzaga. Because I'm not buying them as a championship team. And so for each team is different. It's not like I'm saying, hey, I'm not going to buy South Carolina as not a championship team. Well, then of course they're not a championship team. But buying or selling South Carolina would be saying, are they a team that can make it to like Sweet 16? Are they a team that can make it to the Elite Eight? And I you know what? They have a terrific defense. South Carolina, I mean, again, like I said, Ken Pom, ranked number one. But their offense leaves a lot to be desired. I mean, South Carolina's offense leaves a lot to be desired, sitting there at 20-5. First in the SEC, very, very impressive. That is very impressive. You know, them, obviously, Florida and Kentucky are all tied at 10-2 in conference play and 20-5 overall. So identical records to these guys. And so you have to look, hey, head-to-head. You know, what's going on? And South Carolina beat Florida at home, 57-53. And they lost to Kentucky, and that was at Kentucky, 85-69. They got beat very badly. So, in my opinion, it comes down to, you know, hey, look, if we're going to use this argument, they beat Florida and they lost to Kentucky. So, you know, and Kentucky lost to Florida. So, it's kind of, you can't really use the argument, oh, well, this team lost to this team beat that team. And that team beat that team, so that means that this team must beat that team. Like, you can't use that argument because it doesn't always work that way, and this is a perfect example. You know, playing at Kentucky is never easy, though, that's for sure. And the Gators just have been very impressive this year. We'll get to them in a bit, you know. And, you know, the Gators, they lost to Gonzaga, you know, 77-72. They lost to Duke. You know, they lost South Carolina. They beat Kentucky. That was at home. So I guess the test will be what happens when they play at Kentucky. If they can beat Kentucky at Kentucky, that would be extremely impressive. And those two teams play Saturday, February 25th, so about 12 days from now, a little less than 2 weeks. But again, you know, look at South Carolina and their offense. It just hasn't been great, and that's going to be a huge problem for them because defense wins championships, but offense wins games, and they're going to need to have some sort of offense to win. I mean, and you saw the game where they went to four overtimes to Alabama, and that was a great game. But, I mean, just if you look at this offensive team, besides Sandarius Thornwell, I mean, I'm not really seeing a lot of positive things here. I mean, you shut him down, and they really become a one-dimensional team. So I'm not really buying South Carolina. Moving on, Creighton is sitting at 20, and I think that they're probably ranked where they should be. SMU is an interesting team. I think that, you know, them sitting at number 19, I think that they're underrated. I've liked SMU. I liked their team for a while now. They had Larry Brown as the coach, and I really liked them there. But you know, Tim Jankovic is the coach now. He's a solid coach, but Larry Brown built some talent, you know, for Jankovic to take over. And SMU's a good team. They're sitting at 22-4, all right. And they're first in their conference. They They just need to beef up their schedule a little bit. I mean, that's the only thing. But they lost to Cincinnati. That was the only ranked opponent they played. And then they beat Cincinnati, and that was at home. So, I mean, they're 1-1 against ranked opponents. But I really like SMU. I think that they're a team that can make some noise. Any team that comes into the tournament hot is always a team you got to look out for. And this is a very good team. Cincinnati sitting at 18. I think that they're pretty much ranked where they should be. Florida State, I think Florida, as much as they hate Florida State, I am buying Florida State. Jonathan Isaac is a terrific player for the Seminoles. Purdue sitting at 16. I think that they're underrated. Caleb Swanigan, everyone knows the story. He was homeless, sleeping on park benches, you know, and now he's double-double machine for Purdue. The Boilermakers are here. They are here to stay. They're not going anywhere. They're a solid team. I'm buying Purdue, all right? The Florida Gators, I'm definitely buying. I think that ranking them at 15 is a disgrace to the rankings. Florida is, in my opinion, a team that will probably make the Elite Eight. I'm going to pick Florida to go to the Elite Eight, and I think that they could definitely make the Final Four. They're a very, very good team. I really like the Gators. Virginia Cavaliers, again, ranking them at 14 is unbelievable. I know they've lost six games, but their defense is so good, and they slow down the pace to the point where they're very efficient. So if your shots aren't falling, you've got no chance because you're not going to get them any opportunities to score against these guys because of their tempo is so crazy. I mean, like, the Villanova is kind of like the same way this year. I mean, Villanova's tempo isn't very, very, very fast. And then you got teams like Kentucky, who is like the complete opposite, you know. So, so it's just two different ways of looking at it. Virginia, though, ranked at 14 is at a strength as well. You know, I mean, in my opinion, Virginia is just a phenomenal basketball team. Kentucky, you know, they've dealt with their problems, but they're still Kentucky. It's still John Calipari. But, you know, with that being said, I think ranking them at 13 is way too low. They need to be much higher than 13. Duke at 12. Is pretty much where they should be right now based on the games they've played. But just remember, Coach K wasn't around. Grayson Allen was suspended for a game. Harry Giles is still dealing with his injury lingering. If this team Grayson Allen can figure out a way to stop looking like he's tripping players, and Harry Giles can figure out a way to show that promise that he showed when he was widely regarded as number one prospect in the nation, and Coach K can just do what Coach K does and coach the team well, then this Duke is always around, and they always have a shot to win a title. Wisconsin at 11, I'm not buying Wisconsin. You know, they have a very slow tempo, kind of like Virginia, but the difference is that Virginia has a much better offense than Wisconsin. They're much more efficient than Virginia is. Though I do like Wisconsin's defense, but again, it's just I'm not really buying Wisconsin this year. I think I'm not going to call it a huge sell because I don't think like it's too crazy that they're ranked where they are. I mean, you know, but they lost to Creighton early in the year. They lost North Carolina. They beat Syracuse 77-60 at home. Beat Indiana at Indiana. I'm not sure if that was with or without OG. They lost to Purdue at Purdue. So they played tough opponents. You know, they still have to play Maryland, and that's not going to be a very good game, to be honest, because I think both of these teams are overrated. So, I mean, this is just a team that I'm seeing, and I think that Nigel Hayes is great and Bronson Koenig is great. I really like those two players, and I think that this team is going to go far in the tournament. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not buying them as a Final Four team this year, and I think that would be their ceiling, and I don't think that they could reach it, to be honest with you. So let's move on to North Carolina, my favorite team. I am a Tar Heel through and through, and I think that they are ranked where they should be. I really like the Heels, and I think they could definitely make a run at the Final Four. West Virginia is a team that I really like. I really like West Virginia. AKA Press Virginia. The way they run that full court press is just terrorizes opponents. But honestly, I mean, you have to look at the teams that have beat West Virginia and say, all right, well, this is how you beat that press. And so Temple, not really thinking that this is a team that can go far. Texas Tech, you know, we just saw Texas Tech beat Baylor tonight. Baylor's not a team that I'm buying either, but we'll get to that in a minute. You know, Oklahoma beat them, and they're a solid squad. Kansas State beat them. Oklahoma State beat them. Kansas, and right now, Kansas and West Virginia are tied 71-71 and going into overtime. It's a funny thing about this particular game, because I was preparing to do this show, and I was like, all right, well, I was looking online, ESPN, and okay, Kansas apparently set a record tonight, Guinness World Record for the loudest decibel for an indoor noise, and they were losing it. I was going to say, hey, like, it doesn't even matter, they're losing. But they came back, and I guess they came back, and so it's 71-71, and we'll keep tabs on that game. So if you're listening now, maybe turn the TV on and have that game in the background. Obviously, earlier tonight, Louisville and Syracuse went into overtime. Louisville won. I really like Louisville. Kansas won. They won on a 27. Sorry, they went on a 21-7 run to tie the game, send it to OT. So, just unbelievable. You know, I'm shocked that they came back and won the game. And overtime is starting now. Louisville ranked at 8. That's probably a little low for me, but I guess I can see why they're ranked there. But I think Louisville's a very good team. Rick Pitino's a great coach, and I think Louisville could definitely make the Final Four. Oregon at 7, not buying Oregon at all. I think Oregon is extremely overrated. I think that they might not even make the Sweet 16. As crazy as that sounds. I just look at their losses against Baylor. I look at their loss against Colorado. You know, the way that they fell apart against playing against UCLA. It's not a team that I think is as good as people think they are. I'm not gonna lie. You know, last year they were with the number one seed, and they fought hard. They have Dylan Brooks, who's a very good player. Kyle Dorsey is not bad at all. I mean, they've got five guys who are averaging double figures. They can rebound the ball. I mean, Jordan Bell can rebound the ball. But again, it's not a passing team. They're you know, Dylan Brooks averages 3 assists a game. Dylan Ennis 3.2 assists a game. Peyton Pritchard 3.5. I would like to see, you know, I mean, a little bit better passing from the Oregon Ducks. If I think they're going to make it far, passing is such an important part of the game for me, and it's such a crucial piece of college basketball and basketball in itself. And they can't really pass the ball very well. I don't like that. UCLA at 6. I'm not buying UCLA. I'm not buying UCLA either. I think they're the best offense in the country. Lonzo Ball, TJ Leaf, I get it, I understand, but I think the UCLA could lose in round of 32. I think they could. There's a very high chance they could not make the Sweet 16. You know, they lost it to Oregon, Arizona. The USC loss was pretty sad. I'm just not buying UCLA. There's something telling me that this team is not as good as people think they are. Lonzo Ball he's a very good player. TJ Leaf, again, is a very good player. But this team, I mean, their defense, like, leaves a lot to be desired. I mean, they allow, 76 points per game, which is, that's 270th in the nation. I mean, the defense for this team is pretty much non-existent. I mean, it's really, really bad. They went up 87 points against how do you let up 87 points against Cal State Northridge? You know, how do you let up, just 89 points against Colorado? I mean, it's just I can't buy UCLA. I can't do it. I won't do it. I can't do it. UCLA, as much as that pick might surprise a lot of people, and as much as I like Lonzo Ball and DJ Lee, maybe Lonzo Ball, I'm thinking UCLA is a little bit overrated. Arizona is the same way. I'm not buying Arizona. I think Arizona's very overrated. I know they beat UCLA. They got some good pieces there, but I think U of A is overrated. I'm not just saying that because I'm a Sun Devil. And if I was, no harm, no foul, because I hate U of A. But, I mean, U of A is not as good as people think they are. U of A has a solid, you know, solid offense, solid defense. What's the issue? What's the issue for U of A? You might ask yourself, why am I, you know, why am I so against U of A? They're one of the top scorers, scores 15 points a game. But you know, I mean, their offense is it's pretty efficient, but it's not great. So this team needs to get it together, passing the basketball. Again, I'm just going to keep pounding that to your head. Teams that can pass the basketball are some of the my favorite teams in the NCAA. And so I'm going to take a look right now at you know, team leaders for assists, and we'll go to that in a minute after this. Baylor. I don't like Baylor. I think that they've embarrassed themselves numerous times this year. Kansas is a team that, you know, they're always good, you know, Bill Self, you know, so they're always going to stay around there. Villanova, obviously, I love Villanova as a team. I hate the fact that they beat my Tar Heels in the championship last year. That was heartbreaking. But, Villanova is Villanova's scary. They're a scary, scary team. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Villanova does. I really am. And then again, let's finish with Gonzaga. I think they're a very good team, but I'm not buying them. Not buying Gonzaga. They always make it far, but they never make it, you know, too far. So let's look at some teams that I am buying. You know, Gonzaga passes the ball well. I do like that. You know, I really do like that. Kentucky, I love Kentucky, you know, the team, obviously, because they pass the ball. You know, they pass the ball. Oregon, you know what? I take back what I said about Oregon. You know, now that I think about it, you know, they do have some guys that can pass the ball. All right. West Virginia, like I said, I really like them as a team. Creighton, when they had the UNC, Purdue, okay, UCLA. Okay. So, look, I mean, UCLA leads the NCAA in assists per game. Wow. I guess for some reason it doesn't say that on their page. But UCLA, Purdue, North Carolina, UNC, I love the fact that they're able to rebound and pass the ball. That's why UNC is my favorite team. I think they're the best team. But that's a little biased there. So let's just move on, and let's talk about Grayson Allen just for a little bit, and the fact that this man has been accused of tripping players constantly, and I'm sick and tired of it. Because he has done it. There's no lie. All right, he's tripped players. But you know, basketball and in the game of basketball, guys get tangled up all the time. And lately, in my opinion, there's a video of the guy coming out every single time they play tripping a player, and I think he's just getting tangled up at this point. Now, it's hard to see because in his track record, you know, at the beginning of the year, he was actually tripping players. But, you know, how stupid do you got to be to continue doing that? I mean, there's no way he goes to Duke. You know, Duke's just below an Ivy League school. So he's clearly a smart guy. He knows that there's scouts there that are watching. So I mean, Grayson Allen, like, I don't really think that he's that dumb that he's continuing to trip players. Now, I want to briefly talk about the NBA draft that's coming up. It's not really coming up, but the upcoming NBA draft. That should be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to the draft. And right now, I'm just going to go through some names and who they're really mocking. I mean, Thomas Bryant at 32 to the Suns. I just start all the way from the bottom. I like Thomas Bryant. I think he's a good player. You got Luke Kennard at 27 to the Blazers, who just traded for Jusuf Nurkić. Caleb Swanigan, the guy I told you about from Purdue, they haven't gone to the Nets, and boy, can the Nets use some talent on either side of the ball. Justin Jackson at 25 to the Jazz. T.J. Leaf at 23 to the Raptors. I mean, Bam Adebayo, 21 to the Raptors as well. Harry Giles that slides all the way down to 19 to the Thunder. I think he should stay in school. Look, at this. Look, if I'm Harry Giles, I want to address this. If I'm him, I know whether or not I still have it, or whether I'm ever going to be able to have it again. He has the opportunity to still get a million-dollar contract, multi-million-dollar contract at the NBA level. But if he comes back to school and he still can't perform next year, he sacrifices all of it. He tears his ACL again, he's done. His career is over. So he's got a decision to make. If he feels that he's still good enough to come back to, next year and be a very good player, the player that we thought he was going to be, great. Please do it. But if not, then I guess you got to run with your millions and just be a nobody in the NBA. I don't know what this guy's going to do. I feel horrible at this point. moving on, OG Anunoby going to the Detroit Pistons at 17. I like OG. I think he's a very good defensive player. Kind of just doesn't really make any sense. They took Stanley Johnson. He's very, very similar to OG. We got Ivan Rabb going at 14 to the Hornets. They have my Heat taking Justin Patton, center from Creighton. Don't really like the guy that much, but okay. Miles Bridges at 11 to the Blazers from Michigan State. He's averaging 16-8 right now. They got Malik Monk going to the Knicks at number 9. He's averaging around 22 points per game. De'Aaron Fox to the Mavericks at 8. Lauri Markkanen, who my roommate likes, my buddy William, who was on the show last week, he likes him a lot. He's putting up 15-7. Jonathan Isaac, like I mentioned earlier, from the Seminoles, averaging 13-8, going at number 6 to the Pelicans. Jason Tatum, number 5 to the Sixers, averaging 16-7 right now. Dennis Smith at 4 to the Magic, averaging 19-4-7 for the NC State Wolfpack. They have him going to Orlando, so I'm not really sure what they're going to do with Alfred. Josh Jackson at 3, I'm not buying him. But he's averaging 17-7 and also 3 assists per game for Kansas. They have him going to the Lakers at 3. 2, they have the Suns taking Lonzo Ball, which pisses me off because I really want him, but the Heat, for some reason, keep on winning, averaging 15-6-8 for the UCLA. And at 1, to Boston, unbelievable. They got Markelle Fultz, averaging 23-6-6. And they have him going. They have him going to the Celtics. You know, Markelle Fultz, one of the youngest guys in the draft. You know, so just unbelievable that the Celtics could finish with the number one pick. The Celtics could finish with the number one pick in the. I guess I cut out. I guess I'll see you guys next week. And follow me on Twitter at Ryan Dor. Sorry, guys. I guess I just cut out there for a little bit. I'm not sure what happened. My browser kind of just refreshed itself. But let's just talk briefly about baseball. I've got about 6 minutes left just to talk to you a little bit about that. And so my contention is that all of the hype and this is going to the Red Sox. You're forgetting about the Cubs, and the Cubs are still around, man. They just won the World Series. Don't forget about the Cubs. I mean, I know people were hyping up the Red Sox, but the Cubs are, you know, they're still around. They just won the series. This is a dynasty, in my opinion. I don't know what people were talking about the Red Sox for when the Cubs are still around. Now, I want to briefly talk a little bit about the New York Yankees and the genius that is Brian Cashman. I can't believe I actually just said that, but for God's sakes, finally, the man made a decision that wouldn't have Steinbrenner rolling in his grave. So if you just go back, what happened? They had Aroldis Chapman. They traded Aroldis Chapman in exchange for Gleyber Torres, who is the number one prospect for the Cubs, the number one prospect arguably in baseball, and Derek Jeter's replacement because I'm not buying Didi Gregorius. So what happens? They get Chapman. They trade away Chapman, get Torres. Chapman goes to the Cubs, wins a ring. Then they sign Chapman back in the offseason. Like, that's genius. Like, they were like, okay, it's fine. We'll let him go. We'll get him back. And we'll get Torres. I mean, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Tyler Austin, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Gleyber Torres. The New York Yankees have arguably the best farm system in baseball right now, in my opinion. The best farm system in baseball. You don't see that. When are you going to see something like that happening? When are you going to see the Yankees? I mean, it just no one saw it coming, but the Yankees have secretly, like, you know, just rebuilt for the future. And the Yankees are back. I'm telling you right now, the Yankees are going to start winning again. Like, they're going to start winning again. It's going to be – I can't wait because it's going to be Yankees-Red Sox again. And I'm looking forward to it. Because, in my opinion, that's the best rivalry in all of sports. And then comes Duke, Carolina. I keep saying in my opinion, that's what I think. I think it goes Yankees, Red Sox, and then it goes Duke, Carolina. So we got about three and a half minutes left. So I mean, I want to briefly talk about Holly Holm, and the featherweight division in the UFC for women's is a joke. They have a champion who no one knows. Holly is pretty much done. I mean, from what Eliav said, I mean, just kind of like a one-fight wonder. You know, she's clearly talented. She beat Ronda Rousey, but now people are like, oh, well, at the time they were like, oh, you know, holy crap, she beat Ronda Rousey. But now people are like, oh, well, Ronda Rousey sucks. So, whoop-de-doo. You know, I mean, how much – it's interesting. Now that Ronda has kind of fallen so far – it's kind of hurt Holly Holm's value too. It's kind of just made Holly Holm seem like she's just indispensable now, you know. And Dana White's got a decision on his hands. I mean, am I going to keep Holly Holm? What am I going to do with Holly Holm? It's something that we need to talk about. I think you got to cut her. I'm going to cut Holly Holm at this point. You know, excuse me. I'm gonna cut Holly Holm, and that's that. I'm sorry. You know, now I want to go and briefly make some predictions for the Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson card while I have you guys here. So let's just begin. You know, the undercard, Rashad Evans. You know, he used to be a champion, but he's kind of done. He's done, so I think Ian Kelly beats Rashad Evans, in case anyone actually cared about Rashad Evans anymore. Let's see. Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt. Not bad. Not bad for a fight. I think Overeem wins, you know, considering Overeem, was a title not very long ago. And then he lost, but, you know, Overeem is a very, very good fighter, and I think that he'll knock out Hunt, you know, and that'll be interesting. Khabib versus Tony. I'm pretty sure I gave my prediction for this. And I think that Khabib will win. Tyron Woodley. By the Khabib win submission. I think that Woodley wins this fight. I think he'll win really the unanimous decision this time. There won't be any controversy like last time where they announced Woodley as the winner, and then they're like, wait a second, well, it's a majority draw now, so we're trying to make some more money so you guys can rematch. There's a little conspiracy there. There's your option to catch that. So yeah, I think Khabib wins. I think Overeem wins, and I think Tyron Woodley wins. So maybe I guess we'll see what Conor does also. I'm not sure what's going on with him. But any guys, in the meantime, thank you for listening. This has been UFC Meets Fantasy Sports with Ryan Dorfman. I am your host. Catch me on Twitter at Ryan Dorf. Catch me next week, same time, at 9 p.m. doing UFC Meets Fantasy Sports. Topic for you next week. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good night. Appreciate it as always. Thank you.